This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hey guys, it's Victoria Schaefer, your host of Tales of the City on Pet Life Radio. I'm super excited about today's guest for a number of reasons. Not only is he the president and CEO of San Diego Humane Society, but he is also a licensed veterinarian and a certified animal welfare administrator. Please welcome Dr. Gary Weitzman. Thank you, Gary, for being with us today.
Oh, thanks, Victoria. Really good to be with you today.
Congratulations on your third book, The Complete Guide to Pet Health, Behavior, and Happiness, published by National Geographic. I have it right here in front of me, and it is a hefty book filled with a ton of very, very important knowledge, a lot of which I didn't know.
You know, it was fun to research, too, because I've been a vet for like decades, and there were things that I had to actually research to get what's common now. So it really, it was learning for me too. And I hope it helps people at home take care of their pets as well as possible.
For sure. Well, I have a ton of questions for you. So everyone who's listening, stick around because after this commercial break, I'll be talking with Dr. Gary Weitzman about a number of issues that I'm interested in and that I think a lot of you guys will be too.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
Pick up two tubes of Dogosuds.
Get the third tube free.
Peppermint, tea tree, lavender, Dogosuds shampoo.
Made with all-natural coconut, jojoba, aloe. Great for healthy skin and soft, shiny coats.
But no itchy, harsh chemicals.
Lather up, rinse away.
Try Dogosuds. Buy two, get one free.
At Dynavite.com.
Dynovite.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back. You're listening to Tales of the City on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Victoria Schaefer, here with Dr. Gary Weitzman, the president and CEO of the San Diego Humane Society and a veterinarian with over three decades of experience, who recently came out with a book, The Complete Guide to Pet Health, Behavior, and Happiness. This go-to guide covers first aid, insider tips and tricks, and expert advice for all sorts of pets, from dogs and cats to birds and rabbits. Thank you, Dr. Gary Weitzman. Do you like to go by Gary or Dr. Weitzman?
Oh, I do. Just Gary is absolutely fine.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
So, I mean, as I said before, I got the book in the mail, which you guys kindly sent me, and I was completely hooked on reading all sorts of things. I learned that dogs can tell time through smell, which makes perfect sense of why my larger dog, Echo, he's a Great Pyrenees Australian Shepherd, always knows when it's 5 o'clock, when it's time for dinner.
And it's not because you're cooking necessarily, right?
Exactly.
Isn't that amazing? Haven't people always said dogs don't really know the difference? So you leave the house and you come back and they think you've been gone for a week, or you're gone for a week and it's the same as if you've left for 15 minutes. But now we know that they actually do track time, and it's through their best sense, which is smell.
Yeah, I always had a feeling because he is so spot on when he wakes me up in the morning at 7 o'clock and when he's ready for dinner at 5 o'clock. It's like almost to the minute.
Yep. And I think a lot of cat owners out there will actually agree with you, because they're woken up at 5 o'clock in the morning because it's time for breakfast, whether or not the clocks have changed and it's still dark out or not.
Yeah, totally. So as a vet, I have probably the top question you get, which is, what are some things that you recommend every pet owner do in their home to make sure that they keep their pet happy and healthy?
Yeah, okay, that's a good one. I think everything's related. And we were very, very aware of making this book, not just about pet health and behavior, but like the whole span of where do you get your first pet and what are the questions to ask to, of course, end of life. So it's all about happiness. So the best way to keep your pets healthy and happy is to enrich their lives. And so the number one thing I would say at home is make sure home is a wonderful universe for your animals. So whether you live in New York City or you live out in rural Idaho, it's really important that that entire world for your animals, cat, dog, chinchilla, or whatever, is the most enriched one possible. So that will lead to health. It will lead to lots of benefits. And people often say, you know, well, I got maybe a cat because I didn't have time for a dog. Ooh, that's the wrong reason. If you get a cat, it's because you love cats, I hope. But you have to enrich that world for your cat, because for most cats, they don't even get to go outside. But same for dogs. We really want to make that home experience to be the best possible place for that animal to be. So it's really enrichment's number one.
That's an excellent point about the cats. I hear that a lot, that people get cats because they didn't have time for a dog. Yeah. And you go into a lot of detail on how to choose the right pet for you and your family. Can you go over some of those questions that you should ask yourself before making that commitment?
Yeah, and actually the first thing that I do say is a disclaimer. Nobody can tell you what to choose for your first pet, because no matter where you go, unless you're thinking, I want an Affenpinscher, or I want a Bichon, and I've always loved that breed, or if you're crazy like me, I want a German Shepherd, or maybe crazy like you, because you've got an enormous combination there with, did you say, a Great Pyrenees and an Australian Shepherd?
Yeah, I have one Great Pyrenees Australian Shepherd mix named Echo. He's nearly 90 pounds. The rescue I got him from said, oh, he'll be like 30 pounds. They thought he was maybe just a smaller Aussie in a lab. And he grew and grew and grew. Like the first year, I think he was gaining like half a pound every day pretty consistently. Yeah. And then I also have a small Boston Terrier Chihuahua mix.
Oh, okay. Okay. I don't know how I got Australian Shepherd there, but
well, because Echo is mixed with that. And so he is quite rambunctious at times. And then I've got the spoiled little brat, I would say, really, of a dog. She is so spoiled.
That you love.
Yeah, of course I love her, but she gets everything she wants, all attention on her, sits at the dinner table. I mean, it's a little
successful Boston Terrier.
Yeah.
Which are great, great dogs. We don't see enough of those dogs. They are fantastic dogs. But that's the point, right? I mean, you went to rescue to get your dogs, and I love that. And, you know, running an animal shelter, of course, you know, adopt. That would be great because we want animals to get into homes. Some people really want a specific breed, and go to a good breeder if you want that. And maybe partner with a shelter that's progressive in thinking about people's needs, and will send you to the right breeder, or connect you with a responsible breeder if you want a particular breed. But often you walk into a shelter or a rescue and you fall in love, and it was not at all what was in your mind when you walked in. So my answer to your question, how do you pick the right animal for you? Keeping your mind open is probably the best way to do it, and locking eyes with something that just fell in love with you, because they do instantly. And we take a little longer often, not always, but that's how you do it. And if you go to a shelter or a rescue group, talk to the adoption counselors, or talk to the person in the rescue or the volunteer that's fostering, and get all the information that you can, and they will actually help you find the right animal. And it really, it's the best form of marriage brokering.
What animals do you guys have at the San Diego Humane Society?
Well, yeah, we have a lot. We take in about 50,000 animals a year.
Oh my goodness.
So it's an enormous endeavor. It's, I think, the largest number in the United States for one organization. And on any given day, we have, like today, we have 2,200 animals here.
Wow.
And everything from reptiles and birds to dogs and cats, of course, to chinchillas and guinea pigs and horses, pigs and chickens. I mean, it's just, it's like Noah's Ark landed. The nice thing is that we're in a really supportive community in San Diego that values, you know, the relationship between people and animals, and we have lots of wonderful adopters. So we get about 94% of those animals out into homes, which is really, that's thrilling to me.
Yeah,
but often
amazing.
It's to people that didn't think that they wanted a Chihuahua, or they didn't know that they might have wanted a Shepherd mix. And so that's what they fell in love with here. So it really, it should be a family thing. It should be a once-in-a-lifetime, wonderful, just really exciting moment in a family's life to bring everybody involved to a shelter or a rescue and go meet who will become part of your family for the next 15 years.
Yeah, and speaking to that, I wanted to congratulate you for this Getting to Zero movement that I read about that you've accomplished in San Diego. It's just cutting out all inhumane euthanizations, right?
Yeah, we actually... San Diego became the largest city in the United States to be at zero euthanasia of healthy and treatable animals. So every single animal in a shelter in San Diego County can actually be guaranteed a home as long as they're healthy and treatable. You know, there's always euthanasia to end suffering. And for unhealthy animals or those with medical conditions that can't be treated, we treat a ton of them here in San Diego Humane. But there are certainly diseases that can't be, and there's aggression that can't be handled. And for those animals, the most humane thing is not to inflict, you know, too much on them and to let them go. But so many of our animals, 35,000 to 40,000 of them, get into homes every year. And it's a good thing. It's definitely a testament to how supportive our community is to take care of animals and to adopt. And that really helps. The adoption helps a lot.
Yeah, and you made a good point in your book about calling it getting to zero as opposed to a no-kill policy. Yeah. I recently saw a documentary called Life in the Doghouse. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's fantastic.
No, I will.
It's so good. Similarly, just about, you know, it's not the shelter's fault that they have to.
Right. We don't ever use the term no-kill, and most of my progressive colleagues in animal shelters around the country don't use that terminology either, because it basically pits shelter and animal welfare organizations against each other to kind of imply that one shelter is euthanizing because they want to do that is really the opposite of what's true. So we never use the no-kill terminology, but what we do say is we save every life that we can. And for us, we guarantee that no healthy or treatable animal will be euthanized. Mm-hmm. And it kind of puts us all on the same level. And I think that's really important because every group, whether it's a rescue group run by volunteers or a big shelter like mine or everything in between, we have to work hand in hand and together. And if we don't collaborate and work on the same level and support each other, then we're not going to ultimately help animals as much as we could. And that's the bottom line.
Totally. So speaking of rescue, obviously there's just so many animals in need, and spaying and neutering is super important. Now, there's always the question of at what age should I spay and neuter my dog? And while a lot of shelters, I know they spay and neuter their dogs before they adopt them out, which is like 3 months old. Is that dangerous?
Well, no. And there's been a lot of information about this very issue. And I got to be honest, we don't know yet exactly what the answer to the question is. And it's changed. Most pediatric spays and neuters have started to slip back to about 8 weeks as the start. Mm-hmm. So for us, we do that in San Diego. We do 8 weeks or 2 pounds, 2.2 pounds actually. And that seems to be the right time to do it. We are required by law to spay and neuter every single animal before we adopt it. So that's the law of the state of California and a lot of other states as well. So we don't have a choice. We have to spay and neuter. And if they're puppies and kittens, it has to be done at 8 weeks. So that's a given. But the real question is, what does an owner do at home if they get an animal through any means and that animal is not spayed and neutered? What's the best time to spay and neuter?
Totally.
And I think there's been so much controversy about this. Everything from incontinence, from spaying too early, to behavior issues, to even cancer has been implicated in early spay and neuter or even just spay and neuter. I think the real answer is we now know that that cancer implication is wrong. And the real answer about cancer is that if you live long enough, whether you're a dog or a human, there's a really good chance you're going to be dealing with that word, cancer. Mm. So that kind of skewed the results of that earlier study. So we're going to hear much, much more information about this in the future. But for me, I would say I would spay all female animals by 6 months before they go into heat. And then I would neuter, if in a perfect world, I would neuter all the male dogs by about 8 to 9 months. So they have a little bit more time to develop. Mm-hmm. Male cats, I would neuter as young, up to 6 months as well. So male and female cats by 6 months, female dogs by 6 months, male dogs by 9 months. And the reason you want to neuter male cats earlier is because we don't really want them spraying and doing all those things that make it really hard to live in the house with them earlier than that.
Yeah.
So 6 and 9 months, those are probably the best times.
So you talk about, you just spoke about cancer and how it's just inevitable for most pet owners to have to deal with. What do you think about health insurance for your pet? Do you think it's worth the cost, or is it just more cost effective to deal with it when it approaches?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of pet insurance, and I wish that everybody else was as well. We need it out there because healthcare for animals is crazy expensive, and it's not your veterinarian's fault. It costs a lot to run hospitals and all the equipment necessary and the training, all of that. But I think everyone should have pet insurance. If they get a young dog or a cat, that's the time to get it. The premiums start low. Really, shop around and talk to experts. Talk to people in shelters. Go on Yelp. But there's a lot of really great pet insurance companies out there now. We use, in San Diego Humane, we use a company called Pet First. We've used a company called Trupanion. They've been wonderful, both of those companies. And I think it's really a great idea to get pet insurance. You know, it's funny, I used to recommend to people, well, if you don't get pet insurance, put money aside every month. And we're humans. And guess what? We don't do every month.
Right.
Don't put the money aside. So I love pet insurance.
Yeah. Do you know about these? I read recently about these sorts of membership vet offices where you pay like $9 a month to be able to go to the vet whenever you want. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you have any knowledge on those? If those are,
I love those.
The vet? Really?
Yeah, I love those. It's the, can I say this? It's Kaiser Permanente solution to pet health. And I think it's a perfect solution. I know that they started in LA and spread
to San Francisco.
Yes, that's
right. I'm in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yes, and really great idea. Listen, if you're paying $9 a month and you're kind of enrolled in having professionals help you with your animal for the life of your animal, you can take better care of your animal. You don't have to have that price tag hanging over your head. And we know animals are going to be healthier. And the biggest thing is it's easier. The access is so much easier if you are on a health plan like that to be able to get in, to know the system, to have them know you. I think it's a really brilliant solution, and it might actually be the solution that we're looking for to this whole accessibility problem in veterinary medicine.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that can be very costly is dental cleanings for your dogs. And, you know, I know it's really, for me too, it's scary to, you know, choose an elective surgery that's expensive and also requires anesthesia. What do you think about that? Is it necessary? Can you just brush your dog's teeth at home?
Yeah, you could do both, actually. Well, like us, we get our teeth cleaned, generally humans, every, you know, twice a year. But you better brush your teeth in between. We would love everyone to brush their dogs and cats' teeth. It's not as easy as with humans, but it's really, once you get them used to it, it's actually a pretty fun and great routine to do. I think that anesthetic dentistries are absolutely necessary in most dogs and cats. And the frequency of doing the dental procedure is something you should talk to your own veterinarian about. But to me, it's not at all an elective procedure because there's, can you imagine going your whole life without getting your teeth cleaned? Our animals can't either. And just open up that mouth on an older dog and cat, and there's hard tartar there and gingivitis, and only an anesthetic dentistry can really successfully get that off and get your animal's teeth polished so that there's no injury as the scraping happens, just like for us, and can get under the gum line. So that doesn't mean that cosmetic dentistry, those that do it without anesthesia, it's not legal or sanctioned everywhere, but I know there are some out there that can clean things up, but it will never, ever, ever get the mouth healthy like an anesthetic dentistry. So for what you said, Victoria, I totally hear you. The thought of doing an anesthesia that you don't really know if you have to do, it's scary, but thankfully, you know, partner with your vet, make sure you have a healthy animal, that there shouldn't be any undue risk with the anesthesia. Anesthesias now are so much safer. It doesn't mean that, you know, even I will pace when my dogs are having their teeth cleaned, but I know when I get them back, I'll tell you, they are going to be 80% healthier animals because their teeth got cleaned and we got underneath that gum line. And at the very least, I would say consult with your vet once every 2 years to see if your animals need to have a teeth cleaning. See your vet every year, of course, but specifically talk about getting the teeth cleaned at least once every 2 years.
Okay, I'm going to do it. I've been very hesitant,
okay.
But I'm going to do it after hearing you speak about it and then reading about it in your book. I think I have to just...
I'll tell you, your dogs will feel better. It's crazy, but they'll actually feel better afterward.
Well, part of the hesitation as well is my dogs really hate going to the vet.
Do you have
any tips and tricks for pet owners to make their pets more comfortable with the vet?
Yeah. You know, I think of it like if you go get LASIK surgery, you never have the surgery without them giving you a little bit of Valium before you actually are lying underneath that laser. So the same thing for our animals. We want to actually make sure there's every single tool to make them more comfortable and calmer before they do something unpleasant like go to the vet. Pains me to say that that's unpleasant, but we know it can be scary for them. So for dogs, I would say many dogs like being in the car. Keep the car fun. Make it fun. When you go to the vet, start giving treats at the door and start just go there. Don't even go there for an appointment. Mm. Just go, give your dog a treat, go back in the car. Just get your dog used to doing this a little bit, or go meet the receptionist and say hello and have him or her give your dog a treat and then go home. Those are ways to start getting your dog more accustomed to it. If you have one that's really not happy about going at all, talk to your veterinarian about getting a mild sedative. And we use a lot of different ones for animals now just to have them be calmer. And when your animal's going to go and have a dental procedure, that sedative can actually almost act as a pre-medication before it. Talk to your vet first, of course. But we do not ever want animals to be scared and stressed when they come in. There's this whole fear-free concept now about bringing animals to your vet, and that we make sure that all of their nervousness is mitigated to the best way possible. And that ranges from treats to anti-anxiety medications to, for cats, feel away and soft music and the way you hold the carrier. It's really all about decreasing their stress. So there's a lot of things you can do to make your animals a little bit more comfortable about going. But try the trick with the treat and the receptionist for a little while.
Okay,
although you're in LA, you're going to need a sedative just to drive over to your vet.
It's like as soon as we're in the vicinity, they start panicking and they just, you know, one of my dogs, Echo, and I are almost the same size, and he's such a good dog otherwise. But when it comes to the vet, it's pretty hard for me even to get him to go inside. He's so strong.
Oh, poor guy. Talk to your vet. Let's see if your vet might want to give you something to make him a little bit more comfortable coming in.
Well, that's an excellent suggestion for sure. Another thing that is great about your book is that you have a lot of photos of different health issues and how to identify them and how to treat them at home. But how do you identify an emergency when it's time to go to the vet versus a common injury or, you know, illness or something that you could just treat at home with, you know,
over the counter or something, or patients and care.
Yeah,
that's an excellent question. And that's actually what prompted the book, because over the decades that I've been working with animals, you're really working with people. And people are always telling me or recounting their latest adventure at their vets. And it's always at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night into Sunday. And boy, it just, it never fails. So that's when it happens. So first of all, there's a big disclaimer in the book and throughout it that we want you to, I want you to go to your vet and get proper health care and the questions answered. But there's some basic, you know, just sort of common sense things that I think are important. Diarrhea in dogs is very common. Vomiting in dogs is very common. Neither of those necessarily have to be emergencies unless they persist.
Right.
And also unless there's, you know, the attitude of your dog is getting worse and worse and worse. So there's some things about that. And it also always struck me that people know more about how to treat their own human children than they do their animals. So there's some over-the-counter tips that you can do for dogs. None of the over-the-counter things for dogs can you use with cats, because cats are way too sensitive to any medication. But you can use Pepto-Bismol in dogs. You could use a little bit of buffered aspirin, and there's some doses in there. But these are not things to substitute for seeing your vet if a problem is serious or if it persists. Mm-hmm. But they're the things that might help. You know, for instance, seeing blood in the stool. Only on this podcast, right, can we actually talk to you about that.
We love that topic.
I'm sure it comes off of it. But, you know, even seeing blood, it's very common for dogs to have blood in their stool if they have an irritated bowel. It's not necessarily serious. So these are the kinds of things that I really wanted people to know to make them better partners with their vet and to be able to take even better care of their animals.
What about skin stuff? Like hot spots. I always see people, I deal with them with my dogs, people are always struggling to heal hot spots. And I guess hot spots is a general term, right?
Yeah. It's moist dermatitis, usually caused by licking will cause it, but usually because of allergies, sometimes fleas, usually allergies. And golden retrievers are the poster dog for that. But there's a lot of things that you can do. First of all, when you see your dog doing it and you know your dog gets them, nip it in the bud. You stop it right away. Call your vet and say, hey, I need something for itching. And there's a number of things that work, and there's even more things that don't work for itching, like antihistamines. They're pretty ineffective for dogs for itching. But if you know your dog is getting a hot spot often, I would say go get a nice Oster clipper and be able to shave some fur around there if your dog will let you do it. Let some ear get on there. Clean it with good soap and water. Be gentle, of course, and use an antibacterial, cortisone spray that you can get at your vet, or you can even get it at a local CVS or Walgreens or somewhere, and start with that if you want, and then go to your vet if that doesn't work. If it gets serious, you should always, 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 always go to your vet. But there are things you can do just to save your sanity if you have to go every 2 months because of a hot spot. We as veterinarians want to show you how to do it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But then there's the cause. So there's other ways where I think that now's when you really partner with your vet by saying, hey, my dog's getting these every 2 months, and especially in the summer, can you help me? And yes, there's a number of things that your vet and veterinary dermatologists can do to help, like allergy shots, maybe a change in shampoo or more frequent shampoos, all of those things. So that's where it's really a team approach. Things you can do at home and things you can do with your vet.
Definitely. Those are all good things. And yes, I realize this is not a book to replace a vet, but just to help you become more knowledgeable. And there's another thing that I really enjoyed, a whole section about proper food, how to navigate the pet food aisles. There's so many different types of pet foods, and now, the trend of cooking for your dogs. Do you have any advice for people trying to choose a pet food for their pet, or is it worth the trouble to cook at home for your pet?
To cook your own. Yeah, it's funny. Our animals started with us because they ate the scraps from our cooking. So now that was, eons ago, and now we're back to that where people are cooking for their pets. But even more than that, there are all these fresh foods out there, fresh packed foods that get either delivered to your door, or you can go pick them up in pet stores or in specialty stores, and they're fantastic. They're human grade, very few additives. They look like the best dinner that you can get on like a Sunday night, because they're always stews, something like that. But those are wonderful, fresh packed foods with human grade food. I love those for dogs and cats. But if you're looking for a food for your animal, one of the best things to do is use the clerk at the food store. That's the best. They can always direct you. They will have their own biases, which is human nature. I think the really short answer to all this is all the foods are certified, and they're all going to make your pets healthy. They really will. The most premium ones you can get are, in my opinion, the best ones for your pet, because we don't want byproducts. So anything you see byproducts on that label, don't use it. And don't use raw food, even though I know some people are very successful with that. But there's just bacteria there,
really?
And it's not great to handle. Yeah, and I did it for my dogs for a long time, and they did okay. But I'm not a fan of that. But I love these fresh-packed foods, and there's a number of companies out there that do this. And then the biggest thing is, don't be scared of grains. There's very few dogs that are allergic to grain, and corn is not the enemy. I make a big point in the book. That's really marketing, and even the pet food companies will say that there's no problem with grain. It's a great source of energy, and corn is really fine. You just want them to have meat and protein in there as well, and that should be the first ingredient.
So what about these foods that say they're no grain? Is that
that's
not
for,
good?
That's for mom and dad. Marketing. That's it.
Oh, it doesn't actually.
There are some animals that do not react well to grain. Like there's some people that are gluten-free or whatever, but very, very few. So grain and corn is a grain. They're not a problem. But here's the real answer to all of this. How does your dog or cat look on the food that you've picked? How healthy are they? And so everything is a laboratory experiment, right? And then see how your pet does. Do they love it? Because they need to love it because the animals love food. And are they thriving on it? And if they're not, slowly introduce a new one and try that one instead.
Okay, great. I had no idea. I thought I was buying no grain, really expensive dog food because it's just all solid protein and that's that. But
yeah,
there's a lot.
It turns out
it.
We don't want them to just have protein. They can have the solid grain. The grain gives them that energy boost that actually can really be helpful, and they like it. How many dogs are out there eating an entire field of grass? So they, yeah, which is I guess we could call that a vegetable too, I suppose.
Right. All right. Well, you've answered a ton of questions. I think I've sprinkled in some of my own personal questions, and I have one more one that pertains to me just today, actually. And I was like, wow, it's so great that I'll be speaking to Gary later. A friend of a friend found a puppy recently, just this past week, who appeared to be starving, but otherwise the vet said was in good health, just needed some nutrients. And now we have this dog, probably will be dropped off at my house tonight, actually, because she can no longer care for it. What do you do when you find a dog? And what should I do as far as finding this dog a home and knowing that the home is going to be a good one?
So the home's not going to be your home.
The home's not going to be my home. I will foster. I will foster this dog for a little bit, but she's posted signs around. I know your book has a whole section about just even how to make a good sign, and she's reached out to shelters. No one's claimed the dog, but also a lot of shelters are full, and we don't necessarily want to.
Yeah, certainly wherever you live, there's a shelter that's responsible for your area. By law, there are shelters that are responsible for your area, whether they're government shelters, municipal, or they're private organizations like mine. And we have municipal contracts in 12 different cities, so we'd be responsible. So what your friend found was a stray, and then that stray actually ought to, by law, go to the shelter so that it can be found. We love it when people try to make that connection on their own and that animal never has to come to a shelter. So as long as you let the shelter know, responsible for your area, that this puppy was found, description, where it was found, people have 4 days generally to go and retrieve their animal. That's a general rule of thumb. And otherwise, I would say for help placing that animal, go on Nextdoor in your community with a good picture of your animal. You could advertise through email, social media, your Facebook account, or what we would do here in San Diego is you could partner with us to actually get that animal placed, and we would just leave the puppy at your house until we placed it. So if you're in LA, go to SPCA LA would be a great resource in LA. Every city has a great resource. There's quite a few in Los Angeles as well, of course, because it's a huge city, but they could help you actually place that animal as well. It'd be great if you kept the dog at your house, though, so that he wasn't exposed to a shelter.
That's what's going
to
happen. I'm gonna have now two puppies at my house this week. So it's dog.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, it's dog crazy over here. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I really do believe that your book can help people be the best possible pet owners. And for anyone listening, please go out and get The Complete Guide to Pet Health, Behavior, and Happiness by Gary Weitzman. Thank you so much. I would call you with all my vet questions and concerns. I think
anytime. Anytime.
I got some free advice just this afternoon, so thank you.
That's great. Great talking to you.
Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
That's all for today. I want to thank Dr. Gary Weitzman for taking the afternoon to speak with me. I highly recommend his book, The Complete Guide to Pet Health, Behavior, and Happiness. I've got a couple puppies downstairs whining and waiting for me to open the door. So follow me on Instagram at Victoria Lily Schaefer. I'm actually going to be posting an adorable photo of my dog Brew in the bathtub today. And I'll see you guys all next time when I tell you another fun and exciting tale of the city.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.